My Michelle Live, sports time out. The fans, the field, the faith, the fun. Here's Michelle.
I'm Michelle Mendoza, and you are My Michelle Live Sports Time Out, where we are at the Kraken practice, the NHL's brand new team hitting the ice for practice. That's where we're going to be broadcasting from, and let me introduce you to the guys. Hey, guys, welcome to the show today.
Howdy.
We've got Michelle.
Matt Peel, Man of Steel.
The
We've
of
got
steel.
Rich Hallstrom, our Encyclopedia.
Encyclopedia
Sports.
Rich.
Joshua McMillan joins
Rookie
us.
Of the year.
And we
Josh
should have
McMillan.
Some more of our fellas joining in. Guys, welcome to the Kraken practice.
Well, Michelle, that hat looks great, and I know that you are having a fun time at the Kraken practice. Just be sure to duck.
Indeed.
Just be sure to duck if a puck comes your way.
So far, we're pretty good as we're at their practice facility here, just north of downtown Seattle. This is going to be pretty exciting watching Coach Dave give the orders. We're watching a lot of excitement and enthusiasm. I mean, a lot of fast-paced move on the ice. It's pretty exciting. It's almost like I'm going to liken it to your family here in Seattle. We have our family of teams. When you get a new team, it's like having a new child. You know, you don't know their personality yet. You don't know what they're going to be all about. You don't know what the future is going to be, but you sure as heck know that you just love them. So, Rich, I wanted to talk just briefly about the Kraken hockey season kicking off, well, shooting off pretty soon. What say you?
Well, I say that Mark Giordano, the veteran that they got from the Flames in Calgary, he's been the captain for the Flames for the last 8 seasons. He was one of the first players on the ice yesterday when training camp opened up. Look for him to be a leader. And Yanni Gourde, who had shoulder surgery in July, unexpectedly came out in a red jersey. He's raring to go. He is the pick they got from the Tampa Bay Lightning, so he knows all about championships. Those are two big names I'm going to be looking at.
Well, let's talk about the Kraken goalie. 27 years old, $10.5 million contract. Is that what we're looking at?
Yeah, that's what we're looking at. Now, I'm not sure I'm going to pronounce Phillips' last name correctly.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. And I'm going to tell you why. Hockey, to me, of all of the sports, is the most difficult to cover because it has the most difficult names.
Marshawn showed us that.
Yeah. Yeah. And everybody's name is worth 27 points in a Scrabble game.
That's right. So learn them well. And part of this, Josh, as we look at Kraken games starting up soon, I'll show you guys the schedule here. Can you read it? Memorize it? Rich, you already have.
Oh, yeah.
As we're looking at that, Josh, it is pretty exciting, but we are getting to know who our players are. Some we saw in the junior league, some with other teams. Seeing them in this new family, it's kind of exciting. I want to hear from you.
Yeah, I'm excited for this team. And first of all, remind me later to get you a little microfiber cloth so you can clean off your camera there.
I don't know what is going on here. Sorry about that.
It's a spy cam. It's a new edition of a spy cam. There we go.
I got to get you one of those little screen cleaners so you're not
in a
haze over there. Gotta fix your setup. I'm excited for this team. You know, I mean, I'm relatively new to hockey. I've, you know, watched it in passing, but never been like a super fan, partially because, you know, we haven't had a team here in Seattle where I am. So, you know, necessarily always follow teams around the country from you, but I'm excited for this. From all that I've heard, the research I've done here, this looks to be a team that Seattle will love very quickly. They look to be a team that is very heavy on defense. Even some of their wingers that they got, these guys are not necessarily, I'm going to score 40, you know, put 40 pucks in the net every year. But they are guys that are gritty. They're tough. And they're wings that play defense too. So this should be very Seattle-esque type of play that we're going to see from them, which you guys know I'm all about that defense. I love
Seattle. Okay, yeah, you being a Seattle guy, what do you mean by Seattle-esque?
I mean, Seattle, that's kind of our thing, right? Defense is our thing. Defense wins championships. That's what Pete Carroll preaches, and that's what the Mariners preach, you know, play good, clean, defensive baseball. And that was kind of their goal in their rebuild, right?
So
was
did to get defense fast do get Seattle that – did defense do Seattle well this weekend? As they it was last week.
Are you sure you want to bring that up now? Because I got some things to say. You might want to might want to wait.
How about
I got some things to talk about with Seahawks for you.
How about we how about we stick to hockey until we have to depress ourselves?
Yeah, because I'm ready to go on that. So I don't know if you want to unleash the Kraken from me yet on the Seahawks.
Yeah, I think we need to. Anything else, guys, that we wanted to take on with hockey before we move on?
Well, I think we know, Michelle, by the pictures that you've been showing, that practice facility is top of the line. And everything the Kraken has done up to this point is top of the line. They've become involved in the community. They've become involved in the community. They've signed a lucrative, forward-thinking TV deal with Root Sports. Their first preseason game is going to be on Sunday night at 6 against Vancouver from Spokane. So the Kraken are really ready to go. This is an expansion team with an advantage, taking advantage of the Las Vegas Knights.
There's a mode there.
Expansion rules, and they've built themselves a team all the way on many different levels, and it's going to be great to see. Finally,
hey Matt, we've talked about NHL from primarily these crazy Kraken fans up in the northwest corner of the United States, but down in NOLA, I mean, what team do you guys root for?
We don't have hockey down here. You know, ice doesn't do well except when it's in a cocktail in New Orleans. So that's kind of how we treat it. A few years ago, along the I-10 corridor, we had the ECHL, the East Coast Hockey League, which is like AA. So there was teams in New Orleans and Biloxi and Pensacola, Mobile, Lafayette, Baton Rouge. And there was for about 2 years, there was a nice little rivalry because you could drive 45 minutes or an hour and you ride a new team. So there's always a lot of constant traveling, going back and forth and having some fun. But, you know, that kind of hit its peak and took off. So unless you're a transplant from somewhere else, not a lot of hockey coverage down here.
Okay, that's okay. But I also think for the Seattle Kraken here, it has been, 100 years since we had a professional hockey team like this. There's been a junior league, of course, and a lot of folks have enjoyed that. But there is definitely a learning curve where hockey's concerned. A lot of folks in, and I don't think we have an excuse, we're up here in the Northwest, it gets cold, but some of those warm weather states, it's been a bit of a learning curve.
Yeah, don't hate on the New Orleans Brass down there, okay? You guys got a team.
Oh, we used to. And that was it. Josh,
are they gone now?
Oh, they've been gone. But that was it, Josh. Okay. There was New Orleans Brass. There was the Mississippi Seawolves. There was the Mobile Mystics, the Baton Rouge Kingfish, the Lafayette Ice Gators, and then the Pensacola Ice Pilots. So
Matt, do you think that the New Orleans area would have accepted better an NHL franchise, knowing that that is the top of the line? That's just like if New Orleans didn't have an NFL team and then an NFL team all of a sudden showed up. I think there would have been better reaction to it.
We'd have to look at how are the Pelicans being received, right? If they're not winning, it's hard to put people in the stands, especially like on these midweek games. And that's what the Pelicans are currently facing, not to diverge into basketball, but it's a similar situation, right? You bring in a new team, and unless they're going to the playoffs or unless they're winning consistently, they're just not going to fill the stands. So it becomes kind of a cavernous, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, one thing I did want to talk about is in full swing, there are some great things happening out there as we start off the season in week 2. One great, ungreat thing was something that you mentioned, Josh, you want to unleash the Kraken on the game that took place with the Seahawks. And I find this interesting just coming from Las Vegas, where we're looking at the odds this week. I think the Seahawks at the last chance are about down 1.5% unfavored in their game this weekend. And I'm looking at this thinking, you know, what do you want to unleash on our listeners and viewers today?
Oh, man. Well, there's a lot to unpack here. I mean, there's a lot to unpack from the game. There's a lot to unpack from the drama that's unfolded with Russell Wilson and Pete Carroll since the game. But we'll start with the game. You know, the first half, the Seahawks were dominant. I saw Pete Carroll more animated than I've ever seen him heading into the locker room at halftime. That guy was pumping his fists. He was all about it. You know, the defense played well. They were keeping them out of the end zone. They were bend but not break, exactly what you want to see. Offense was moving downfield. And then they quit in the third quarter. You know, and even into the third quarter, they had a 14-point lead. And there's been a lot of debate over whose fault this loss is on. It's on a lot of people, you know. I mean, Trey Flowers did some awful, awful coverage that allowed Derrick Henry to bust that play wide open. He should have been bouncing Derrick Henry back to the inside. Instead, he over-pursued him at the line of scrimmage, let him blast by him, which was, you know, really unfortunate. But honestly, this is going to be my hot take. It's maybe an unpopular opinion. I put a lot of this blame much more so on the offense and Russell Wilson than I do on the defense. Now, you guys know me. I have long been a Russell Wilson supporter. I've advocated for him, been all about him in his camp. This one, you know, after the game, he said, well, we scored 30 points. You know what, Russ? You didn't. You scored 17 points, really, because 1 point was on completely busted coverage where Freddie Swain was wide open, not a man in sight. You know, and you took advantage of that, sure. But okay, the other one, a fumble at the goal line. You know, so you got to say 13 of your 30 points were really kind of handed to you.
Yeah.
Other than that,
I'm
he made
go with
a,
that,
you know,
Josh.
They did some
big
plays.
There's a point that you made in that is, and I think it's pretty important. The offense spent very little time on the field, and
yes,
they wore out the defense, who put up a pretty good show.
Yeah, the defense was on the field for almost three quarters of game time. They were on the field 40 more minutes than the opposing defense was, because the offense did not have long drives. They did not run the ball well. They did not move down the field. All of their touchdowns pretty much were on big, long, deep balls that didn't have these long drives that take the life out of you. You know, where is the circle of toughness? Like we saw last week when they ran the ball and threw the ball, you know, almost 50-50. It was like, you know, two more times I think they ran the ball. There was no circle of toughness. They didn't get their defense off the field. So, of course, by the end of the game, your defense is getting gassed. You saw it out there, you know, and being down a couple of defensive linemen, it's rough. And I think the bigger takeaway for me, other than the game, was, you know, afterwards, Monday morning, the Pete Carroll show, he said that, you know, I wish Russ could have helped us out there. Wish he would have checked it down. You know, especially those last three drives of the game, Russell Wilson was straight up awful. He was bad. You know, he lost the game for
well,
us.
That's
those
where
last three
I was talking last well, week is maybe some of that magic gone. And I want to widen this past Seattle because, you know, the rest of the country is going, yeah, okay, Seattle.
Well,
you know,
on.
You had your moment in the sun.
Hold on, because there's the important thing here is Russell Wilson's response yesterday to the media. You know, he asked if he agreed with what Coach Pete Carroll said. And, you know, I really expected him to be the stand-up guy he is and hang it on him and say, yeah, you know what? I could have done better there. I should have stepped up for the team. Instead, he said, he didn't say I don't agree, but what he said was what I agree with is that we want to win. And, you know, we were a couple inches from completing those passes. And, you know, it felt like, you know, excuses. There was no responsibility taken from him in that moment, which is what I would have liked to see. And I'm really, you know, I'm upset with Russ about that. I would have liked to see some responsibility for not doing well. And the fact that he was, you know, it sounds like he's kind of low, and Colin Cowherd, you know, the media mouthpiece of Mark Rogers, was also talking about Pete Carroll making bad decisions, which I know, Rich, you're raring to talk about that one.
Well,
yeah,
there's
a whole deal.
Yeah, there's all kinds of things, but I'm just going to zero in right with you, Josh, and I'm going to lay it flat at the feet of Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson almost gave up a safety in overtime, and he mentioned he did not mention that at all.
He didn't mention that.
Okay. At all. You cannot hang your team.
So,
cannot almost hang your team
let me intervene
like
here. Let me intervene here because I do want to widen this beyond just the Seattle show. Do certain quarterbacks, stars of the show, get a little starry-eyed and too into themselves and then lose that initial grassroots oomph that kind of propelled them to their fame and ability? What's going on here? And where else are we seeing this, Matt?
We're human beings. At the end of the day, we're human beings. And yeah, we can read our own press clippings sometimes and get too caught up in it. We also got to think, it's week two. If you're one-on-one, you know, so are the Chiefs, right? So are the Ravens, they're one-on-one. So you're not out of it. So if you think, I don't think it's an out of it thing, and I don't think it's a
oh panic, it's the end of the season. I just think that in this age of COVID and trials and the crazy things that are going on around us, to watch people who get that elite bug and kind of lose their relatability. We saw Cam Newton, you know, he's like, his hair represents how big his head is, I think.
I agree. And, you know, they got to, of course, calm it down, but they also think about these guys. They've been somewhat spoon-fed their entire lives how great they are, right? They got a lot handed to them through high school, through college, and now they're in the NFL. So they breathe a different air, or they think they breathe a different air, and they're treated that way. So, we come to next week and things changed, and we seem to have short-term memories.
Does superstarism ever work in someone's favor? I mean, Tom Brady, superstar, and seems unstoppable.
Tom Brady has done a lot to keep his team together, whether it be in Tampa Bay or New England. We've talked about the numerous amount of pay cuts that he's taken, numerous amount of other things that he's done to promote team unity. But that's why Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time in a lot of people's minds. 7 Super Bowl championships. Russell Wilson's, I'm going to just flat out say it, nowhere near Tom Brady.
Russell Wilson is
one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, but 7 Super Bowls versus 1, it's no contest.
Those are just the ones he's won. You know, he's lost.
Yeah. And it's Russell Wilson's. See, this is the biggest thing to me about last week, that Russell Wilson did not take responsibility for almost making that safety in the end zone and costing his team the game without even a shot to win it. I think that's the other question. You do not put your team in that position. That's the worst I've seen Russell ever play. I will flat out say it.
Wow.
I agree.
The defense did enough for Seattle to win. Bobby Wagner made the play of the game to get the defense off the field and get the ball back to the defense in overtime. But let's not overreact. Like Matt said, it is one game. They're 1-1.
But that's not what we're talking about.
They are not.
The bigger issue is when a team has to move on through the season, what holds them back? And I do also want to get to some of the other takeaways from week two with the NFL. Any thoughts, fellas?
Yeah, I'll chime in on this. This is, even though it happened to the New Orleans Saints, this could happen to anyone, any team. So, you know, there's a big push, right, from the NFL. Everybody get your shot. If not, you're going to face major issues if someone tests positive. So the Saints have their whole coaching staff has their shots, yet 8 of the coaching staff members tested positive. So 8 of your staff that is normally on your sideline cannot be there now for game time and for game preparation. So you have your 4th string quarterback now putting substitution packages together for the offense to try to send them in. You know, we discussed this COVID protocol at massive length and everything they're trying to force to do and break through cases. I don't know. I just think I don't know where this statement is kind of going, to be honest. It's frustrating though to say, all right, well, everybody's got their shot. Everybody's so far ready to go, right? You have the elixir to save life and make you the fountain of youth, but this is not breakthrough, right? We're still testing positive, even though we have shots within the last 3 or 4 months. And now you can't sit there and do your job on the sideline, which then hinders your team. And look at the debacle that we had, but that could happen to any team. I think that's worth kind of exploring a little bit and saying that, you know, what is the NFL going to do? At some point, they're going to have to say, all right, well, just show up and play, or you got to move on.
Well, punishing one sect of people when we're seeing this kind of outbreak, it shows that they kind of overreacted early and don't seem to have the adaptability to say, okay, now that we know more, maybe we should make other provisions.
I think that you can say that the leagues on any level in any sport, football, basketball, baseball, hockey, and soccer have been playing catch up with this thing from the very beginning. And when you play catch up with something that is this serious and you don't think about all the possible ramifications, this is what you end up with.
It is indeed. So as we look at week 3, anything that we have to look forward to from your favorite teams and some of the teams that are maybe showing a little bit more promise than we thought?
Well, I think the big story this year right now, Sam Darnold, quarterback for the Carolina Panthers, they're now 3-0.
Yeah.
And that's a heck of a good team right there.
Yeah, I mean, it goes to show, you know, the New York Jets are really just a quality franchise, which can really get the best out of a prospect.
Right.
You know, they really just show, you know, they draft really high, you know, quarterbacks, and every time they just really get the best out of them, right? Right?
Josh, I'm sorry. Let's look at it. Your tongue is too firmly rooted in your cheek. I can't understand you.
Well, now they give McCaffrey's hurt, right? They've been giving him more than 30 touches a game, and he was hurt last year. So we'll see what happens now, you know, without McCaffrey. But this is a guy that's 30% of your offense.
Yeah.
So no, that's going to come back to bite you.
That's going to be a huge, for sure,
roadblock. Huge roadblock.
I mean, McCaffrey is one of the best running backs in the NFL, and he's not talked about that much anymore because he's been hurt so much, you know, and he's kind of like your Ferrari, right? He's the guy that when he's on, but if something's wrong, you know, it's a problem, you know, and it
right.
Can
most
be
of your time with the Ferrari, the Ferrari spent in the garage with the Italian mechanics. It's not on the road. So
exactly.
He's the $1 million baseball card that you spill ketchup on at the dinner table.
Oh no.
Once again, you know, this is the thing going on today. Are we spending too much time waxing our Ferraris and showing them off rather than running them hard? And you know, that sometimes it's not the Ferrari that gets you across the finish line. I wanted to talk about my trip. I will show you a short video of the experience I had going to Las Vegas.
Sounders versus Lyon. Here we are at Allegiant Stadium, working our way inside. So it's going to be interesting. MLS, the Mexican League, MLS, as we've talked about on Sports Time Out, is really finding their way and becoming more and more legit. So are they legit enough to overcome Lyon? The odds have favored, since we're in Vegas, you know you can find this out quickly. The odds have favored Lyon. But I'm kind of betting on the Sounders, so we'll see how it goes, folks. I'm here just hanging out in Vegas doing kind of a post-game review. God, with my friends. Hello,
she
friends.
Actually,
so, guys, the heck happened?
They switched off when it mattered. That's what happened.
Yeah, I think my friend Nick here said it best. Sorry, Bri. We got out-coached. In the second half, we got out-coached. I mean, they put like, what, you know, those three extra players in, and boom. Don't you think so, Carl?
Yep. Put the three subs in. As much as I rode, they're coming off the field. They scored right after that.
and then they dominated the game for the next 20 minutes.
But can we just say our team still played well? Still,
what do I do with my hair?
MLS respect.
I know. Vicky was so weird that way. So I figured I'd do this post-game analysis before my friends had too much to drink, if you know what I mean. It is Vegas. Just saying.
That was a short trip, Michelle.
It was a short trip. A Mexican team and an MLS team that made it to the final of the League's Cup. The Seattle Sounders played hard, and they played well. Second half, there were three substitutions. Boom. Leon dominated the game after that. It looked fairly evenly matched throughout most of the match. But something that I'll show you, some of the comments that we got on social media. When I posed this question, outcoached. We don't always think about the fact that there's a game going on the field, and there's often a game going on off the field. And it's a game like chess between coaches.
Well, coaching is a tough game. And just like coaches, you know, just like players need to take responsibility for the outcome of games, coaches need to too. And I would say that a lot of those people that say that Brian Schmetzer was outcoached, do they also believe that Russell Wilson cost the Seahawks a game? Or would they think,
or would they think that was too extreme? And that's the thing. There's a lot of people who just say, hey, you can't question. And it's kind of neat how serious we take sports, because if you question, you're not a real fan. And that goes to something that's happening in our society. If you question, you're not really complying. You're part of the problem. But that's the thing. When you question, when you bring people into account, that's how we get better. I think one of the most interesting stories in baseball is the hard play of the most extreme underdog in all of professional sports, and that's the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah, man, these Mariners, they refuse to lose. They are now, I believe they're 1.5 games back in the wild card race behind the Blue Jays, and then 2 games behind New York. It's such a tight race. They just passed the Oakland A's, who they swept in a 4-game series on the road. And, you know, the A's are a good team. I will say they didn't look like a good team this last week. And I think part of that is the emotions in that building. You know, when they're in a playoff hunt, they only have 4,000 fans in the stands. They don't know if they're going to be in that stadium next year. They don't know if they'll be in Oakland next year. They don't know if there's going to be a teardown with a new stadium deal somewhere else. You know, I think there's some emotions getting the best of a team. Yeah, that's
the Mariners
there
are
in Oakland.
2 games back, Josh, 2 games back of the wild card right now.
2 games back now. Okay.
1 game back of the Jays, 2 games back total.
And are they 15 over 500?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, 84 and 69.
Yeah, okay. So the 1 game back of the Blue Jays and then 2 games back of New York. And that, you know, there's, 9 games left to go right now?
Yes, 9 games.
You know, I think to get there's still a difficult road, but you have New York and Blue Jays are playing each other. You know, a lot of the teams in this playoff race have games against each other. So it's going to be a really interesting time. I still think the Mariners have to go 7-2 to win out. But man, how exciting is this that a young team that was not supposed to compete this year is here right now, you know, this late in the season, 9 games left and still vying. And even though, you know, like, man, that loss to the Red Sox was tough, that last loss, because if you losing that game, you became 4 games back. We've clawed back to 2. If we would have won that game at that time, we would have been only 2 games back. Look where that would have put us right now.
Yeah.
You know, that was a tough loss to that Red Sox. And honestly, a lot of people felt at that time that, all right, well, it's time to wrap it up. That was the game. That was the playoff hopes. That was the momentum turner.
They're still playing.
Look at this young exciting team that's still going. That's something to hang your hat on right there, whether or not they make it, is that this is a team that's still going. And, you know, 99% of this team is locked in and playing some of the best baseball they have. Kyle Seager with career numbers. The one guy, Yusei Kikuchi, who was our all-star this year and has fallen off a cliff since the All-Star break. You know, he's the only guy that's really, you know, that has failed us in a lot of ways. But, you know, even last night, we overcame a shaky start from him where he went only three innings and the bullpen came out and was nails. And we won that game, which is another time.
You know,
when, like,
that was really our weakness, too, was our bullpen. And that's what we're seeing really save the day
in all year.
These games. I mean, this is very exciting as we look at Major League Baseball, guys. What are we looking at? It is still really exciting because there's so many question marks, but is there anything that you believe is an exclamation mark in MLB? Rich?
Well, I would say the Chicago White Sox winning the division for the first time since 2008. That's a big deal for baseball fans in Chicago. The Dodgers, San Francisco in tight races. You know, Matt, that National League West is tough, and San Diego fell on hard times after it looked like they were going to have an easy ride to the playoffs.
Yeah, they had an opportunity. You had a legit shot at three NL West teams, I'm sorry, making it in the playoffs. And, you know, the Dodgers, we have a finish out at home with three games against the Padres, and they're going to still want to try and claw back. So it's still tough. It's anybody's game right up until the end. And again, kudos to the White Sox. You're right, Rich. Big on that. So you got a couple small market teams. Oh, you got the Rays, and you have the Brewers leading their respective divisions too. So it does create some parity in baseball. It's not just only the big guys like the Yankees or the Dodgers winning it.
I know. Isn't that exciting? I'm loving this season because of all those question marks. This is one of the best times of the year. For me, I mean, think about this. We've got the drama for Major League Baseball. Football is just kicking off. We've got hockey just ready to hit the ice. And of course, soccer is nearing the latter part of the season, and a lot of exciting things happen. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going on, no end in sight. I just absolutely love this time of the year. So, guys, I want to take this to just open up before we take our final shots to any other sports story that hit you this week that you think we need to tell our listeners and viewers about. Matt, we'll start with you.
Good. I like, you know, Rich, you sent that out. The agreement here now between the MLS and Liga MX.
Oh, that's big. That is huge.
I think there's a great natural competition between the USA and Mexico in soccer, and between the two leagues, right? It's fierce. It's ugly. It's fantastic. You know, everybody loves it. And it's also great because you have a lot of Mexican players that do come in and play in the MLS. Mm-hmm. But you don't have a lot of Americans going down to the Mexican leagues to play. So maybe that can create a little bit of more of opportunity. You have some more Americans going down to play in Liga MX, which would then actually help the U.S. national team. Because mm-hmm. let's face it, the Mexican league is better than the MLS overall. Look at what, you know, Mexico right. does compared to us. Right. So I think it's a win for everyone all around, from a revenue standpoint, from a fan standpoint, from a competition standpoint, from player development standpoint. It's really fantastic.
And I think it's a great way to improve CONCACAF, Michelle.
Yes.
It makes CONCACAF better because they've sanctioned this new tournament. You know, all 47 teams are going to compete. That's a way to make the product better and include it in all your media rights deals. This is a win-win situation for Liga MX and MLS all the way around.
Especially because what that does for American soccer is help us as we are really growing up. I mean, the U.S. men's national team has had some impressive wins over Mexico. We saw for the first time an MLS team go to the League's Cup. This gives us that level of play. We've talked about many reasons why American soccer just hasn't quite cut it. We have so many other professional sports outlets for talented young players to go into. In some of the other countries, if you're looking south of the border, soccer is the big game. That is it. So it is a good chance for us to continue. We're starting to grow up. And I think that's really exciting. And in fact, it's going to tie into my final shot. Is there anything else anyone wants to bring up before we shoot those out?
Well, I would say that this is kind of another Olympic nod. Katie Ledecky is going to be a volunteer swim coach at the University of Florida. Think about that. An Olympic champion with so many medals and a pedigree that can't be beat except by Michael Phelps, helping my college, you know, swim team to become better. Those kinds of experiences, learning from a person with those kinds of experiences, that's wisdom, and that'll make a team better.
Investing in the next generation, and I love that. I think it's time for us to take our final shot. We're going to start with Josh. Final shot.
So I'm going to go back into the golf bag for one I gave before, but Josh Blue, who was a former Olympian, he was robbed of AGT victory. I think he should have won, but he was in the finals. He was in one of the top spots as a comedian there. If you haven't heard Josh Blue, go out and look him up. I love that guy, man. I really wish he would have won. I think he should have. That guy's hilarious. He's great. He has a great attitude, a great spirit. Yeah, all in on Josh Blue. So congratulations to doing well in America's Got Talent this year.
Okay, I like it. Another kind of competition. Rich?
Well, I'm going to give my shout out to Cal Raleigh, who hit a big two-run home run yesterday to put the Mariners back into contention for that game and ultimately get that four-game sweep. Here's a guy that a lot of people didn't think belonged in the major leagues a week ago and was doing, you know, okay as the starting catcher for the Mariners, but not really providing some punch there. And that was a big home run, his second of the season. But once again, it put them in the driver's seat for that four-game sweep. And without that four-game sweep, Mariners are not thinking about the playoffs. But they're still in the hunt because of that.
They're still in the hunt. Matt Peel, Man of Steel, give us your final
Ryder Cup weekend. It's a Ryder Cup weekend, people. So even if you don't like golf, support the USA, right? Go USA over Team Europe. It's the fiercest competition in golf every 2 years. It gets rowdy. It gets a little uptight and tense. So go USA.
So the USA versus Mexico is what a lot of people looked at it as in my final shot. Mexico has a bad reputation for a good reason, their fans. When I was at the game, though, here's what I wanted to give a shout out to my final shot, is to the Leon fans that were sitting around me. They were the ones who were reaching out to people who weren't Leon fans. They were just cheering on Mexico to beat a USA team, and they were using horrific language. There was an actual fight that broke out in the stands because the Mexican fans were throwing projectiles across the aisle, you know, just less than 3 feet, harmful things at Sounders fans. And I want to just give a shout out to those awesome people sitting around me who put a stop to it, that said, you're making us all look bad. This isn't what the game's about. You're here to cheer on your team. You're not here to be a jerk. They were a lot of fun. They sneered at us a little when our team scored. They high-fived us when their team scored. And then they went out with us and enjoyed some of the sights of Las Vegas afterwards. So I want to give my shout out to the cool Leon fans that were sitting next to us. That's my final shot. That's the spirit of the game. That's the spirit of what America should be about. There's our photographer in the background. That's what America should really be about. It should be about, yeah, we fiercely support our team and we fiercely want you to lose. But in the end, we're just here enjoying the game. We're just here enjoying life. And I hope you enjoyed Sports Timeout. Matt Peel, Man of Steel. We've got Encyclopedia Rich. Josh, I didn't give you the proper introduction, but I'll give you an extra duction. Josh, our Wookiee of the Year. You can find him at Josh Reports Live. He's so funny. So you got to follow him on Twitter. He's awesome. And you can find out more about our guys at mymichellelive.com. Thanks for joining us today, guys. We'll be right back.
For more fun, go to MiamiShowLive.com.